Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. QT and Sign Guy with you like normal. Real fast before we jump into things today, if you're looking for some pro wrestling tonight, WCWO, as usual, at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. DOA Wrestling in Toledo, Oregon. BCW in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Kaiju Big Battle in Lamont, Illinois. OPW in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Tomorrow night, you can find myself at WUW America in Bremerton, Washington. Down the road in Vaughan, Washington, Northwest Pro Wrestling having their 6th year anniversary. NEW in Niles, Ohio. And Wrestle Club starting off their annual Tag Wars. Night one is tomorrow in Meridian, Idaho. So if you have some independent pro wrestling near you, go check it out, support what they do. I do want to report that the Do It For The Crew event that Billy Mattern was promoting, scheduled for tonight, postponed due to the excessive heat in the area. They did not have a good working air conditioning unit, and so for everyone's safety, they decided to postpone. So we'll give you the details of when that event will take place. But definitely, if you're in the Midwest where it's very hot, be very careful and make sure the events are still happening. All the ones I listed are confirmed. But without further ado, I want to introduce our guest. I am hugely excited to have him here. First time with us, Diamond Dan Garza, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing out there?
Doing fairly well. Now, since unbelievably it is your first time with us, we're going to start you out with our traditional first-timers question. What got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Well, here in Indiana, Dick the Bruiser, he was the mainstay here in the state of Indiana in the Midwest. I mean, at that time, you know, we just had local TV, so we didn't know that he was going to Japan or that he was in St. Louis or all through there, but we did know that he was, you know, in Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and so forth. But that was the mainstay, the Dick the Bruiser WWA promotion, so watched that as a kid, and I always got excited watching the Bruiser wrestling. And it wasn't until you know, I got in wrestling late in life. I seen that Mr. Electricity Steve Regal have a ad in the paper for wrestling school, so that's where I signed up at.
Wrestling schools back then were a bit different than they are today, I think. It's a little bit different animal. How prepared were you walking into the first day of training at wrestling school?
I don't know how prepared I was. I mean, even back then, you kind of knew what was going on, but you're still maybe wasn't 100% sure. And, you know, going in, you weren't sure how it was going to be. There were some schools that you would go to, and they beat you to death to prove that it was, quote-unquote, real, to hold on to kayfabe, which I still try to do, or, well, you can't anymore, but you still want to hold on to it in your heart. But Steve Regal wasn't necessarily that way. He kind of explained things, and the training itself, we weren't beating each other. We were learning how to wrestle, and he did a good job. He did that, and then, you know, he'd head off to Windy City Wrestling and would wrestle that day. So we kind of did them on Saturdays. We were in a couple different locations. One location was in a junkyard, but they had a room, a racquetball court, and we set the ring up in there, and that's where we did some of our training there. So it was quite of an experience. You know, we had still a good group of guys and a gal that was training at that time. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I didn't think I'd ever be more than just a referee, because at my size at that time, I was probably closer to 200 pounds. And, you know, it was big guys that were the big wrestlers at that point. So, but, you know, I trained to wrestle and kept going from there.
And you talked about not necessarily thinking you'd be an actual in-ring wrestler, but you went from there and eventually started up your own promotion. What point in time was it that you started thinking that promoting was part of the business that you might enjoy?
Well, when I first started and I started training, we ran shows. It was actually a group that pretty much that did the training with me. Chris Goodman, PC Austin, his mom and dad bought a ring, and they were the one running shows here in central Indiana. So we would run shows, you know, in different towns outside of Indianapolis and Indianapolis. So I got involved with that way. And one of the first shows I kind of helped promote, although it was their show, you know, I did most of the promoting, was in my hometown of Greenfield, and that was like in 1988, about a year or so after, you know, I trained. But getting into promoting myself, we kind of did a little bit here and there, but it wasn't probably until I got into PWI and we got TV that, you know, we really had to promote more shows to do the actual TV tapings before we had the arena there, doing them at the bingo halls and different locations. So, you know, it was just kind of a progressive thing, you know, happening in what I needed to do to kind of keep things going here in Indiana with PWI. I mean, in between, you know, I did plenty of shows, went down to WCW and wrestled a few times there. But then, like I said, we had an opportunity with TV on Channel 27 and run Pro Wrestling International. So that's when I got more into promoting myself and Dallas James. Don Parker was the main guy with me that did most of the TV and the booking for the show for, you know, Pro Wrestling International, Wrestling Fever, as we call the TV show. So it's, you know, kind of a hard thing to do as far as promoting. You know, sometimes we drew, sometimes we didn't. The main thing at that point, we were just trying to get TV footage so we could air it on TV.
Now, PWI in its time had a lot of great talent. You had people like Tracy Smothers, Ian Rotten, Diceman Ronnie Vegas, Don Basher, Bobo Brazil Jr., Madman Pondo, a young Troy Miller. Quicksilver was there. So many great talents came into PWI. Looking back on things from the perspective now, do you think that PWI might have been one of the more underrated promotions in the area at the time?
Oh, I think so. I mean, we were kind of old school type wrestling, per se. You know, we were still kind of good guy, bad guy type thing. You know, Circle City Wrestling was our competition at that time, and they had a TV guy that, you know, that had a little better quality TV production, well, part of the time, because they didn't have him the whole time. And then they had a money man behind him, and, you know, he'd bring bags of money for their shows. So they were bringing in Sabu and some ECW guys. So it was a little bit of different. But, you know, for what we had and what we were using, we had a heck of a show. We put on a good product. We had a lot of great talent. Some of it's still wrestling now. You know, TJ's still wrestling. Bobo's still wrestling. I don't think Bobo's ever going to stop wrestling. But, you know, and of course, that was the start of Madman Pondo, you know, and Ian Rotten, you know, starting the hardcore matches in Indiana, you know, which kind of, I wouldn't necessarily led to a bad thing later with, you know, the hardcore and kind of got a little excessive, not with us, but later on in the state of Indiana. But it kind of started there. You know, Pondo hadn't been necessarily in a barbed wire bat match, but one of the first ones that he had was with PWI, and you know, he wasn't scarred up, as I say, you know, Pondo before the scars. You know, he wasn't scarred up when he first started with PWI, but he was interested in that, so we agreed to bring in Ian and run some matches with him. And then, you know, Bull Payne came in, and we ran some more matches. So, you know, it was an interesting time, you know, because there was just a few promotions in Indiana at that time. There wasn't a ton of them like there are now.
Speaking of Madman Pondo versus Ian Rockman going to extremes, there was the infamous night when there was a six-man tag team match that saw things spill outside into the snowbanks, back into the arena. Bodies were flying everywhere. The match was eventually stopped, but not by the referee. It was, I believe, the owner of the building that actually came out to ring the bell to stop it. What can you tell me about that night?
Well, it was actually Jeff Smith, a.k.a. Jack Richards. He had a couple different aliases. But he was our TV guy. He's the one that had the production equipment, and he had the building, or he actually was renting the building. He kind of, we'll say, he may have had some bad checks that he was passing to pay those off. But we, at that point, we didn't care because we had a building, we had TV, and it wasn't costing us anything at that time. But, yeah, he was it kind of got out of hand. And, like I say, people weren't familiar in that area with hardcore. And, I mean, there was tables being broken, chairs being thrown, people by in the crowd. And he came out, and he just hollered and screamed, stop. We were just all – we all kind of froze. It's like, what the heck's going on? You know, the crowd wasn't sure what was going on. We weren't sure what's going on, whether to continue or not. But, yeah, he came out and just screamed and hollered and said, that's it, and said a few choice cuss words. And, you know, it ended the match. So it wasn't anything that was set up. It just happened with him, and he was a little pissed at that time. So, yeah, it was a strange night.
Indeed. You mentioned going down to WCW, and you worked some television spots for them. You also worked for Memphis doing some of their television. What was it like getting such widespread television coverage? Obviously, Memphis was huge in that area. They were one of the highest-rated TV shows in the Memphis region, wrestling or not. And WCW, of course, had an international television presence. What was it like getting to work for shows that you knew were going to be seen by so many people?
Well, I'll start with Memphis, you know, Jerry Lawler's and Jared's promotion. We got booked through Quicksilver, and actually Spike Huber got us, you know, the job down there. So there was four of us that went down there. As Quicksilver, T.J. Powers, and Brian the Blaster Starr, and we drove all night to Memphis, got there early in the morning, and waited for TV, and went in. Of course, most of it's live TV. They do tape a bit that, you know, they're going to air later, but most of it's live. So I was selected to wrestle the Snowman, who was the champion at that time. Didn't speak to him in the back, didn't even see him, and, you know, he was out in the crowd with, quote-unquote, his posse at the time. So, you know, I go to the ring, and then he comes in and just, you know, goes to town and stiffs me with a big clothesline. I thought, well, after that, that's the last one. So when I see him coming, I was bumping, and, you know, I wasn't going to be stiffed again. But, you know, at that point, you're just doing what they say and what they want. But like I say, he really wasn't calling anything. He was just kind of doing it. And it wasn't, you know, a long match. I do have it on YouTube, so at least I could say that I wrestled the champion down there. But, you know, I think we got paid $25 because it was TV. their guys don't get anything for TV. They get it at the house show later that night or Sunday or on the loop. But for the TV guys, we got a big whopping $25. So we drove to Memphis, drove back for $25. But, you know, it was more for the experience and a chance to go down there and meet some of those guys. And, you know, when I was going to the back, downtown Bruno at that time, you know, I said, you know, a little stiff. I said, well, yeah, thanks. Thanks for letting me know now. But, you know, it, like I say, it was more for the experience. And then when I went down to WCW, it was through Hustler Rip Rogers, and he would take guys down there to do TV, and he got a hold of me, and we went. There's usually a couple other guys. There's usually like a total of four people that would go in the car. The gimmick was you paid him trans, and, you know, he got you the matches down there, so you went down there, and the big hope was that you wasn't going to work Vader, because Vader usually hurt the guys, or the Steiners, you know, were pretty stiff with the guys. But the first time I went down there, I was supposed to wrestle Abdullah the Butcher, which, you know, I wasn't real thrilled with that. But during the taping, Buff Bagwell was supposed to do an interview with Terry Taylor at that time, and he messed up the promo. So instead of sending Terry Taylor back out with the same guy that he wrestled, they switched things around, and they had Terry Taylor wrestle again and put me in there. So that was my first match down in WCW, and it was an easy match. I was nervous as can be because, you know, I wasn't sure what was going to happen, what to do. I just want to make sure that I made them look as good as possible and just do what they wanted. You know, I didn't go in there thinking that I could try to do anything because I knew I probably wasn't going to. But then Abdullah the Butcher, the guy that took my place, he just beat the crap out of him. Stood on his head. He took a crutch from somebody in the crowd and beat him with it. So we just kind of watched it on TV, and I was just thrilled to death that it wasn't me that, you know, got stuck in that match, though. And then there was another time that Rip was in Germany, I believe, and he had me take some guys to Topeka, Kansas, and that's where I wrestled Cactus Jack and Rick Rude in the same night. And, you know, as bad as it might think that there would be wrestling Cactus, he was as easy as to be. He took all the bumps, you know, so it wasn't, you know, on himself, you know, to make it look good. But there was no issue with that. The two guys that went with me, one of them wrestled Rick Steiner and about got his jaw broken from a Steiner line. And the other one, Doug the Reptile Roberts, Doug Casey, wrestled Vader in a handicap match. So there was another guy with him, and Vader about busted his eardrums punching him. So, you know, the two of them were, you know, beat up on the way home driving from Topeka, Kansas. I wrestled twice and got paid twice and had the easiest night of them all, but so it was interesting. I appreciate what Rip Rogers, you know, did and took me down there. Yeah, he was kind of – the deal is, you know, he's making money. But, you know, if he didn't have faith in you that you were going to look good, because he didn't want to take somebody down there that was going to make him look bad and lose him his spot as being able to bring guys down there. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate that, you know, I'm able to have the footage from TV and be able to say that at least that I did it. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I could have went more, but, you know, I've always had a full-time job, and I wasn't able – I didn't want to give up a full-time job to go down there and wrestle, you know, all the time. As much as I wanted to, you know, my obligations wouldn't let me. So it was, you know, I was thrilled to do it, and I'm sure anybody else, whether they would say they wouldn't go down there and be job guys or not, they would have done the same thing if they were given the opportunity.
You've talked about some pretty rough moments here with guys like Vader and the Steiners and that type of thing. Obviously, sometimes things get a little rough in the ring. Things happen. What would you say has been the scariest moment that you've witnessed in wrestling?
Witnessed? Yeah, it's kind of you know, I've seen a lot of things, you know. I've myself separated the shoulder and stuff, but, I mean, as far as seeing something, just sometimes some of the amounts of blood, I've seen people hit, you know, a vein and just, you know, it's more that you're seeing it in the back when they're back there and the blood's just pumping out. The one that used to wrestle as the Sheik, was John Osborne. He had busted, cut a vein, and it was just bleeding, and, you know, it was, you know, and it kills me sometimes to give it away, but, yeah, he used instead of using a razor blade, he used a Zacto knife tip, which was extra, extra sharp, and it cut deep, and, I mean, he just had blood everywhere, and it, you know, just kind of a scary moment, and Dallas James did the same thing one time at a TV taping. He cut himself too much and had to go to the hospital and get stitched up. So it's more just seeing, you know, the blood of somebody, you know, possibly, you know, losing too much blood just from an accidental cut, you know. Well, somewhat accidental. But I don't know if there's just a lot of things you see and stuff now you see that people are doing that are just, it's just nuts, you know, what they're trying to do, what they're jumping off of and throwing out of the ring, hitting poles and everything else. It's just amazing. Makes me think what we did was not too bad.
Well, we've come to the point in the show where we have some game that we like to play called Word Association. I will throw out the names of some people that you likely have come across in your career, and the word or two that pops into mind is the answer. Are you prepared for a round of word association?
We'll see.
All right, here we go. Quicksilver.
Well, I would have to say Quicksilver is probably one of my best friends in wrestling. When I first got started, he was there kind of helping out with the training and found out that he lived near me at that time, so he took me to shows and introduced me to people and got me on shows, got me on one of Bruiser's shows. At that time, when I first started, I just refereed the show, but, I mean, I got the rest, referee, you know, Dick the Bruiser and Jimmy Valiant and then a bunch of WWE guys at that time. So he did more for me, helping me out when I first got started. And appreciate everything that he's done. He's been my tag partner. He's been my opponent. I mean, we could get in the ring and not call anything and have a heck of a match. He's probably one I probably wrestled more with or against than anybody else. So great guy.
Next name, Tracy Smothers.
Tracy I've met a few times, actually wrestled him as El Diablo. He's always been nice. When I went down to WCW, you know, I met him there, and, you know, he was one of the first guys to come up and greet you and say hi to you or whatever. But he's always one that seems to want and be able to help other wrestlers out. Like I say, I'm not great friends with him because I don't know him that well, but every time I met him, he's gone out of his way to be friendly.
TJ Powers.
DJ Powers, he's still wrestling, still wants to do it. He's one of the guys that started with me when we started training. You know, always liked to be the heel. But, you know, he's also a great guy. He's had some issues in the past, like, you know, some have, but he's straightened himself up and he's doing good, and he's still out there wrestling.
Ian Rotten.
Kind of mixed feelings, I guess. You know, he came in for us, you know, helped us out, you know, had some good matches. You know, then he kind of went away and did his own thing. You know, he kind of ruined it a little bit for people like me promoting shows in Indiana in the armories because he kind of killed it with the hardcore stuff. But, I mean, he's done a lot of stuff. He's made a lot of stars. He's still running shows. So, you know, I'm not going to badmouth him for that. You know, he's still going at it. But, and like I say, just kind of mixed feelings on how things are.
Dylan Bostic.
Dylan's a great guy. You know, I met Dylan when, I don't know how old he was. He may even have been 15, 16 years old. He came out where I was training guys at. He was already training, but he came out, worked out in the ring. He's just a skinny little kid at that time. But he's worked hard. You know, I helped him get into OVW with Rip. I gave Rip a call and said, hey, I got this guy. He's very interested in going further. So he went down there with Rip. Rip took a liking to him. And, you know, he's helped him out also. Rip's, you know, helped him get some bookings and you know, of course, doing the training down there. But he's Bill's also, you know, built himself up. He's more muscular now. He's wrestled all over the place. You know, I am surprised that he's not, you know, either in NXT or Impact, you know, or MLW. It's going to happen at some point. You know, that's all I can say. You know, knock on wood, barring an injury, you know, I see him as coming up fairly soon. Great talent.
Referee Toby Lee.
Toby Lee's a great guy. He's a guy from my hometown of Greenfield. So, you know, Toby's a guy that wants to, you know, he wants to be a part of wrestling. He wants to help out whoever he can. He referees for quite a few promotions here in Indiana, but he's always friendly, always a great guy, always joking, always laughing. I always enjoy being around Toby.
Daryl Rose.
D-Rose, as we call him around here. Met D-Rose through when we were, when I was doing the OVW shows with Rip. And, you know, he was used his spot to sell tickets. And we've become friends. And, you know, we don't talk on the phone all the time to each other. But, you know, as everybody else, either on text or messages on Facebook or whatever. But he's been on the hotline for quite a while now. Funny guy. You know, he's wanting to get involved in wrestling, so he's down at Jerry Wilson's HPW on a monthly basis, down there managing people, having a great time. But, yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, he would do anything for you. And, you know, he just enjoys wrestling and wants to be part of it, even that he's kind of started at a later age in life, we'll say.
Sean Kemp,
great talent. I mean, you know, he started young, you know, I, of course, knew his dad from OVW when we were running shows. He was on the shows there as the backyard, I think they call them the backyard boys or something like that. But, I mean, he's, you know, he can do anything. And, you know, I think he's got quite a future in store for him, you know, and he's wrestling all over the place, so I'm happy for him.
Thunder Kitty.
I don't know her very well. I mean, I've seen her at some of the shows I've done, but she's a great talent. She seems to be working all over the place. And, you know, I think she's another one that's just, you know, waiting to be picked up somewhere and got a big future.
Jerry Lawler,
well, I mean, I met him a few times, and that's kind of about it. But, I mean, he's, you know, like I say, in Memphis, he was it. You know, at that time, he was the Hulk Hogan of wrestling before there was a Hulk Hogan, you know, when they brought him in. But he's done about everything. You know, there's always been stories of stuff that goes on in the past. But I kind of look about what he's done in wrestling, and, you know, he's had a successful career, still involved, still gets in the ring, you know, had a few heart attacks, but still going strong. But, you know, he's helped a lot of guys become famous also. So kudos out to Lawler.
Final one, Bobo Brazil Jr.
I've known him since I started wrestling. Bobo's a great guy. I'm lucky enough to wrestle his, you know, people aren't never sure, but it's his dad, Bobo, the original Bobo Brazil. But, you know, I knew him as Calypso Jim when I first got started. You know, he's been around. He's wrestled everywhere. He's wrestled a lot of great talent. He's still in the ring, like I say, regardless of his health situation in the past. But that's all he knows, and that's his life, and that's what he's going to continue to do as long as he can. You know, people know him, you know, may know him more so now than in the previous past as Calypso Jim, but, I mean, he's wrestled a lot of places, and he's wrestled a lot of people when he was with Bruiser's promotion, and then he went to Japan, you know, and I was actually in the locker room when I wrestled Bobo Brazil, and someone asked him, he says, you know, is Jim really your son? You know, because people say, well, hey, they're not related. And even Bobo said, well, you know, he said he was pretty sure. You know, he said, quote, unquote, he said, I was messing with his mama, and, you know, at around that time. So he kind of admitted that he pretty much thought Jim was his son. And then later on, you know, he gave Calypso the rights to go ahead and use Bobo Brazil Jr. because there was actually Bobo Brazil Jr. I tagged with him is actually Bo's son, Carl. I wrestled him on a couple shows in Northern Indiana. Tall, skinny guy, but he was happier doing semi-pro softball. So that's what he was happier doing, and really didn't want to do the wrestling thing, but kind of got into it because of his dad. So there was actually two Bobo Brazil Juniors, you know, but most know Calypso as Bobo now, Bobo Jr. now.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and he has some questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to QT for a bit.
Sure.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Dan.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, not bad. It's pretty cool here in Washington, a lot cooler than Indiana.
Yes, it is. I actually have family that lives out in Washington.
Oh, okay. Can I ask what city?
I think it's near Walla. Was it Walla Walla?
Oh, okay. The Tri-Cities.
Yeah. Yeah, my sister lives out there.
Oh, okay. Eastern Washington. Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Dan, I'd like to expand on Sign Guy's word association, if I may, with two wrestlers. Are you ready for
sure.
the expanded association? Okay.
Sure, go ahead.
How about Madman Pondo?
Actually, just messaged Madman Pondo the other day, trying to get him kind of started to do some local movies and stuff and films around here and videos. And there's a guy that does music videos that I've done a couple of. And I'm trying to get Pondo in one because they're looking for some little extreme things that they're going to do. So I suggested Madman Pondo, and I sent him the information. So they may end up using him. But Pondo, I knew, you know, way back when, him and Barb. He's a great guy. You know, he's done a lot. You know, he'll even tell you he's not the greatest wrestler in the world. I wasn't the greatest wrestler in the world, but, you know, I got to do a lot of things. But he expanded on that, and he got into the hardcore, made a name for himself. He'd been to Japan numerous times. So he's done well for himself in the sport of pro wrestling. And I'm happy for him because he's a great guy, great guy.
Now, speaking of making videos, are there any truths to the rumors that Madman Pondo was up for selection? He was down to one of the finalists to be in the movie Revenge of the Nerds 2, but the part went to Ogre.
That part I don't know. It's a possibility, but I kind of doubt that.
Oh, okay. All right.
But he has done some movies, though. Pondo has been in some movies, some horror movies. So you may have to check that out online.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if you can find out figure out if he was up for the part in the Revenge of the Nerds 2, the ogre role, can you give Sign Guy a call?
Eventually? I will. I'll ask him and find out. I mean, I hadn't heard that, but I guess anything's a possibility.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. And your last word association, Cousin Cooter.
Cousin Cooter, from knowing from HPW and Shelbyville, and he's another great guy. You know, he's got his little thing that he does down there and with his little hillbilly gimmick, and puts on some great matches. And he's always been friendly and nice to me. Every time we meet, you know, we have good conversations. So, great guy.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. All right. Well, Dan, I saw your YouTube video entitled Diamond Dan versus the Intruder. And he was hailed as from being from parts unknown when he made his entrance, and he was escorted by two policemen. My question is, at the time of his entrance, did you think that he had committed a misdemeanor?
Knowing him, he probably did. Now, he's actually a good guy, and I was kind of actually worried about him. He was on Facebook for a while and then kind of disappeared, and people were kind of wondering how his health was because he was having some bad health. So I'm actually kind of concerned and hoping that he's okay. He's living out in California now, so I'm not sure what's going on, but it would be nice to, you know, hear how he's doing. But he was another one that started with me training with Mr. Electricity, Steve Regal.
Okay, all right. Now, if I'm not mistaken, did this match take place in right around 1988 or 89?
Yeah, it's probably right after we finished training the following year, probably. It may have been out in Greencastle, Cloverdale, maybe out west of Indianapolis here somewhere, I'm sure is where it was at.
Oh, okay.
But yeah,
I
think he's the one that posted that video online.
Oh, very good. That was still during the time of VHS, wasn't it?
Yeah, where you had a couple cameras and had to figure out how to put them together if you were trying to change camera angles at that point for what we were doing.
Okay, well, now you had a nice arm drag takedown followed by a scoop slam at the 3-minute mark. Did you wrestle in high school?
I wrestled 1 year in high school. I wrestled middle school, wrestled 1 year in high school, and then like an idiot, I got a real job, full-time job in school, and I gave up sports so I could work, which I wish I would have stuck with wrestling and not work, but it led to having a good work career, so I guess I chose the right thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Dan, did you find out who the manager was for the Intruder? He was the guy who was wearing the white headband. He looked kind of like Mark Knopfler of the Dire Straits.
Are you sure that wasn't Quicksilver?
Oh, that might have been Quicksilver, yes.
I think that was actually Quicksilver. I'd have to look the video up again, but I'm thinking it was Quicksilver.
Oh, okay, yes. He kind of looked like Mark Knopfler, yes.
Well, yeah, at that point with his hair, that was probably he had more hair then.
Yes. Oh, okay.
So that was probably Quicksilver.
Wow, all right. And, you know, speaking of which, I think there was one time where some fan got over-enthusiastic and at one point hit Quicksilver, not in the match that you had with the Intruder, but you got this fan in a full Nelson, from what I hear.
Yeah, I just quickly looked, and it was Quicksilver that was his manager with the headband. Actually, I think that was a shiny headband at that point. But, yeah, now this was at Cobb's place in Shelbyville, Indiana, at an outside show, and one of the wrestlers there, you know, his family was there, and it's, I won't say redneck, but it was pretty dang close to that kind of a town there at that time. So he was upset. They were the bad guys, but he was upset that, whatever relative it was at that point was getting beat up. So he hit Quicksilver with a chair, and it kind of broke down from there. And, of course, Quicksilver was really ticked off. So I grabbed the guy, put him in a full Nelson, and had my elbow sticking out. And I seen Quicksilver coming with a chair and was going to hit the guy. So I let him go because I thought he's going to hit me on my elbows and bust my arms up. But too bad this guy, he's going to have to take the brunt out of it himself, which he did. But it kind of broke down from there. Bobby Colt was another one that was in the match. You know, he kind of tried to, you know, was still keep kayfabe as much as possible, but try to help out and keep things from getting too out of hand at the time. But it was just a little crazy situation at that point. It was at a bar, so my guess is just a little too much to drink at that point.
Oh, okay. Maybe that fan had tried, before the match had started, had tried to recreate the scene of the Three Amigos when they walked into the Mexican bar and took a shot of tequila. That's my guess.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably had more than one shot of tequila, be my guess.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. All right. Well, Dan, both you and the intruder wore the same color of boots. They were white, and both of your boots were calf high. This is fairly rare when both wrestlers have the same color of boots. My question is, have you since autographed these boots and gave them away for a charity wrestling auction event fetching a high price?
No, actually I still have the same pair of boots, different soles, but same boots. Just in case, you know, I never ever need to get back into the ring again. Not really, but I still have them. At that point, you know, when we started, there was just a few places that you could get wrestling gear or you could get wrestling boots, and it was B-Bar Boots out of Oklahoma, I think, where everybody ordered their boots and you could get them a certain way, but you actually had to measure your foot. You know, it's not like ordering or getting a pair of shoes. I mean, you had to get the width, the length, the calf height, however tall you want them. So, you know, we were kind of limited where they were black or they were white or, at that point, white, you know, guys had white boots with the good guys, black boots with the bad guys, and now it's totally different. But, we were kind of limited with what we get, and K&H out of Ohio is where we ordered our wrestling gear, our tights, and, you know, it was limited to what you could buy at that point. But it kind of changed over the years, and now there's tons of guys making gear and quite a few places that you can get wrestling boots and style them however you want. So, it wasn't too big of a deal at that point, you know, for guys to have the same color boots because, we were limited with what we had.
Yes, several wrestlers have gone on to produce their own wrestling gear. One of the best is a wrestler named Osiris.
Oh yeah, Congo Kong. Yeah, he does a great job. He makes gears for a lot of wrestlers and not just for himself, but I mean a lot of wrestlers that he makes the gear for. So he does a great job. Yeah, he's well known for that.
Well, Mr. Diamond, you had a good leapfrog over the intruder at the 8-minute and 15-second mark of the match. I estimate you were nearly 4 feet off the canvas. My question is, were you a big fan of jumping Jim Bronzell, one half of the Killer Bees, and a state high school champion in the high jump?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed his matches, of course. Kind of like what I liked to watch at that time also was, just there wasn't much lucha libre that you could find, but some Mexican wrestling at that point, and just watching stuff like that, and the Guerreros, you know, at that point, Chavo and Mondo, just watching them and learning, or try to learn a few things from them. So I kind of enjoyed that style of wrestling.
Yeah, Dan, what struck me about this match was how loose the ring ropes were. The ring crew. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish what you're saying there.
Well, it seemed like the ring crew did not do a very good job in tightening up the ropes. And I was going to ask, what were some of the best rings that you wrestled in, and what were some of the worst?
Oh, I've wrestled in boxing rings. I've wrestled in like 12-foot rings. And, you know, the worst ones are the ones with the loose mats, where they may either have like a, not even really a canvas, but some sort of tarp or plastic or whatever. But some of them, you know, you get in rings, some of them are too bouncy, like that one might have been a little bouncy. And then some of them are just too stiff. WCW rings were pretty stiff, but they, you know, they need to be. But, you know, I had a couple rings, and I had a couple good ones. One was made by Ted Oates out of Georgia. So you need one that's going to be, you know, have a good bounce to it, that's not too bouncy, but I mean, you're going to have a good spring to it. The ropes are nice and tight, but yeah, I've seen all sorts of rings, from just trash to some of the best out there.
Well, Dan, in the late 80s, did you feel you had the best mustache in the wrestling industry?
Well, I don't know. I didn't know at that time, but, now called the old porn stash. Yeah, I'm thinking maybe it needs to make a comeback. No, probably not really, but I had one of the better mustaches at that point, I think.
Oh, okay. Right. Because we have a wrestler out here called Mikey Mustache, and he claims he has the best mustache in the wrestling industry.
He may now. There's not a bunch of mustaches out there by themselves anyway. Joey Ryan, I guess, but other than that, not too many.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Dan, were you a big fan of Carlito's Cabana? And if so, if you could travel back in time and you had a choice, would you choose Carlito's Cabana over Piper's Pit if you could make an appearance?
Probably Piper's Pit would be my choice. I mean, I met Carlito when he was in OVW and was on the shows up here. Never had the chance to meet Roddy Piper, but I think his mind and at that point, Carlito was probably more scripted. Piper was just more himself, doing what he does best. So I think I would have chose Piper's Pit.
Wow. All right. Okay. Well, Dan, you went to Greenfield Central High School, whose colors are blue and gold, and your mascot is the Cougar. My question is, when you were going to high school and growing up in Indiana, did you yourself see any Cougars?
No. It depends on what type of Cougar you're saying. Now, later, after I got out of high school and went to the Holiday Inn Lounge, I seen plenty of Cougars there, but that was a different type.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that leads to my next question. How well could you have done in a collegiate style wrestling match against John Cougar Mellencamp?
He was a scrapper. He was tough. He got in a lot of fights. Now, for just wrestling, I don't know. It may be closer, but I think he was a scrapper when he was a kid and fought quite a bit. So he'd been a tough one.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Dan, You had a 2006 graduate of Greenfield Central who was the 22nd overall pick in the 2009 Major League Draft. He also went to the University of Missouri, and he was given a $1,800,000 signing bonus. I forgot to jot down here. Yeah, there you
Kyle
go.
Gibson.
Kyle Gibson.
Yeah, I actually played baseball. Before I got into wrestling, I played baseball. I played baseball with his dad, Harold. And Harold was quite a pitcher himself, good baseball player. He's actually a surveyor by trade, but he opened up a place to people to go and train with baseball for kids, and as they got older too. But so his son, you know, knew baseball his whole life, so he did great and got signed for, like you said, a big amount of money.
Now, if you yourself had been put in his position and made $1,800,000 or had access to that, would you have still gone into wrestling part-time?
Well, probably not. They probably wouldn't have let you. Not if you're a pitcher. You're not going to hurt your arm. But, yeah, I'd gave up wrestling for that kind of money.
Oh, okay. I think I would, too, although I haven't been in the wrestling game that much.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, Dan, it was very good talking with you. You made a very good debut for Turnbuckle Turmoil. And at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, QT. Well, Diamond Dan, one of the things I've noticed over the years in wrestling is a lot of people have sort of a ritual when it comes to their wrist tape. Some people have to apply it a certain way every time. Some people write certain things on their wrist tape every time. There's a lot of rituals out there. Did you yourself have a specific tape ritual during your career?
No, not really. I just wrapped mine a few times around my wrist. I knew guys that taped their, you know, their whole hands and taped them up to their elbows almost. So, you know, for me, I just taped my wrist for a little bit of support and look. I didn't get too crazy with it, that's for sure. You know, I did change it a little bit. If I was wrestling as El Diablo, try to use black, or if I could find red, use red, not use white. But other than that, just a few wraps around the wrist and for a little support, and that was enough for me.
One of the things that you're known for out in the Midwest is the wrestling hotline. You referenced it a little bit earlier. Can you tell us about the wrestling hotline and how that came to be?
Well, the wrestling hotline actually started for PWI just to promote the shows. So it was the PWI hotline at that point, so we were promoting shows, and then when, you know, it got to the point we weren't doing as many shows, we kind of switched up. You know, usually it was Dallas on there doing most of it, promoting shows, because he was good on the mic, and he could, you know, talk, had a good voice. And then it kind of, you know, switched a little bit where I was start putting wrestling news. So I just started adding more and more, you know, international news and WWF news and WCW news at that point. And then it got to where I was picked up by the Indianapolis Star and was getting, we was getting over 20,000 calls a month on the hotline. And then that kind of went away because they quit doing their type of hotlines on the Star. So I went back, still had the same old number, 317-335-4688, or as we said, 335-HOT, H-O-T-T. And now I've got D-Rose on option number 3, the Weekend Warrior Randy Clemmie on option number 2. All do a little different style of stuff, but still giving wrestling news. And we still get quite a few callers. I mean, with the Internet now, it's not like it used to be because everybody can get the news just by hopping online, but we still have some faithful callers that call in just to hear our point of view and what we've got to say. So, I mean, at some point I'm wondering, you know, how long am I going to do this? It's been almost 25 years that I've done the hotline. And, you know, that was every day. I did it on vacation. I did it, you know, I was working. I did it when I was working out of state for different things. So it's, you know, it, at times it was just, you know, a lot to do to try to keep updated on the hotline. But like I say, option number two with Randy and option number three with D-Rose, they do a great job for when, if I'm on vacation, can't fill, you know, they fill in for me and take care of stuff. So I appreciate everything they do. Nobody's making any money on this thing. It's not a paid hotline. We don't have any sponsors. We don't have this or we don't have that. So we're all doing it for the love of pro wrestling and keeping the fans informed with what's going on. So it's kind of just something that means a lot to us.
Well, Diamond Dan, we have just a few minutes left in today's show, and I want to give you ample time. If there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote absolutely anything and everything you would like, floor is all yours.
All right. Just first off, before I get on the air, off here, I'd like to say, you know, I thank a lot of different people. I'd like to say thank Rip Rogers because he got me involved with the OVW Indiana shows. That's where I kind of got started ring announcing. I was in the ring with all the WWE stars that's gone through WWE since they were in OVW. So I was fortunate enough to meet a lot of them before they became stars. You know, Brock Lesnar was there, Randy Orton was there, John Cena was there, Batista was there. I mean, they were all the girls were there. I mean, it was a great time. We had a lot of great shows. But so I want to thank him for all that he's done to help me out. But as far as promoting, you know, make sure you call the hotline, 317-335-4688. We do have a Facebook page, so make sure you go visit that. I do have a YouTube channel that has quite a bit of Dick the Bruiser wrestling matches, or actually his WWA promotion on there. And most of, almost all the PWI TV shows are on there. So just check out Diamond Dan PWI on YouTube, and you can find those matches on there.
Well, Diamond Dan, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Hopefully we will get to do it again very soon. Always a delight whenever I get to come across you. Hopefully that will happen sometime in the near future as well. And thanks again for making time for us here today.
All right, well, I appreciate you having me on here. I kind of wondered whether, you know, and if I'd have enough to say for an hour, and probably I could still keep talking, but I appreciate you having me on here. Maybe have me back, and we can cover a little more stuff in detail, I guess.
Absolutely. I was guessing 5 hour minimum is where we'd start, so definitely we're going to have you back.
All right, well, I appreciate it.
All right, fans, definitely get on the YouTube, check out some of Diamond Dan's stuff. He was always a delight to be around. PWI was a great, great promotion. If you've not seen it, definitely check out some of the footage. A lot of big names came through there, a lot of Midwest guys that were big stars for their area came through PWI. Definitely get out there, support. Be safe out there if you're in the areas affected by the extreme heat. We will talk to you Sunday afternoon. Jack the Snack will be with us, so definitely make plans to be with us, and we'll talk to you soon.